you can rent very comfortably. You may wonder how people can manage to live without electricity. Last night there was no electricity in the town. Those who didn't have a generator sat all night without a fan. And we wondered, how can people live like this? It seems that the nighttime, if there's no electricity, is plunged into the mode of ignorance. How could that be more natural? To be plunged into tamoguna. Because that is the nature of the night. We artificially bring some electric lighting and we can inspire the mode of passion. We put up lights that people feel inspired to get up and do something. Usually at night, something passionate mixed with ignorance. And if the lights all go out, there's nothing much to do but go to sleep or engage in some very ignorant activity, tamasic activity. So why would it be better not to have electricity? That is the more natural. The people of the world lived without electricity for most of the history of the human race. Only in the last less than 150 years has electricity been available for life. But the simpler life without the technology, without the mechanical technology, is actually better and more natural. It's better because it's more natural. It's not inappropriate that the motive to ignorance has its turn. The human body needs. It needs to eat. It needs to evacuate its waste products. It needs to sleep. There should be a proper time to sleep. The sun goes down, the lights go out, and everybody should go to sleep. That's the natural cycle. Thus, the mode of tamoguna has its place. Turn out the lights and go to sleep, like you tell your children, go to sleep at 8 o'clock, and you turn the lights out. So Mother Nature turns out the lights when the sun sets. We artificially try to keep the lights on. Like the children hiding with a flashlight under their sheets, you know, playing when they're supposed to be sleeping. That's unnatural. It's perfectly natural. It's a natural order, and it's more wholesome to simply follow nature. But how can we follow nature when we create such an artificial civilization that we don't know if it's day or night? We don't know where we are. We can be living in the middle of a desert. But we've emptied out the rivers to fill our swimming pools in the backyards and sprinkled water on our lawns. Now we can empty out huge rivers for that purpose, and for lighting millions of light bulbs. So we can think of today when it's night. And we can think we're living in a luxurious place when it's actually in the middle of a desert. This is totally unnatural. It exploits the resources of the earth unnaturally. It creates havoc. And it doesn't make for a good consciousness. When your whole life is artificial and you're out of touch with nature, out of touch with reality, then what kind of consciousness can you be in?
This
verse is interpreted in various ways, but one explanation of this verse from the Isho Upanishad is that you have to know material world and spiritual world. You have to understand the nature of the spiritual energy and the material energy. As long as we're living in the material world, we should understand the nature of matter. And we cannot properly understand the nature of life in the material world if we're artificially making artificial adjustments so that we don't see the reality. We don't see death coming because sick people who are about to die are put away in a hospital so we don't see them. In India, you see out of the streets, sick and dying people. In the West, we hide them away in hospitals. The insane people, the invalid, the old people, we put them away so we don't see them. We don't see the reality because we're hiding it. We don't see death coming. We don't see disease and old age coming. We can pretend that we can be young forever. That people who are 85 years old can try to behave like people who are 25 years old. Artificially. And that way we stay out of touch with reality. I was in a hospital once in my life for more than a day or two. I never had an operation, but I was in a hospital for 8 days with a breathing problem. And they put me in a room with one other man. He was over 80 years old, and he was dying. And he had so many different diseases, they couldn't even list them all. So many things going on with his body at once. And on top of that, he was having psychotic delusions of grandeur. He was totally out of touch with reality. And his relatives would come to see him, but they couldn't relate to him anymore. He was just totally out of it. That's unfortunate. But what I saw was really unfortunate is that hospital, who are spending so much time and so much money is being wasted to artificially sustain this man's life for a short time because he's going to die very soon anyway. There's no way to cure. They can't even identify all the diseases he has. How can they cure him? And they're doing everything to artificially keep him alive for a short time. And to put, to give him some medication so he doesn't feel so much pain. But they're doing nothing to prepare him for death. That's what shocked me. No psychological counseling. They're not even letting him know that he's going to die. His relatives, the doctors, everybody, were hiding from this man the fact that he was about to die. How can they prepare him when they don't even admit to him, don't even let him know that death is staring him in the face? So this is a failure. Not preparing a man properly to leave his body. Vedic education from the beginning, not just for a man who's 85 years old, for that 5-year-old boy, is to prepare him for death. To let him know you are going to die very soon. Palamara was telling that to his friends, 5-year-old boys in the school. That you think you're going to live forever. Don't, that's bad judgment. Your life is going to be gone so quickly. You think you can wait until you're old to practice Krishna consciousness, but you're going to waste your whole life. Half of it is wasted automatically in sleeping. Then when you grow up, you're going to have children and raise a family and waste another quarter of your life maintaining your family. Your whole life will be wasted. And then you think at the end you can start Krishna consciousness. Don't think like that. You should begin now. You don't know when you're going to die. That was the last preaching. And that is generally the Krishna conscious form of education. To prepare us to leave this world. Since we're going to have to leave our bodies anyway, why not make it successful? Rather than leave this world in ignorance, and take birth maybe as an animal in the next life, why not be properly educated so when we leave, it will be the last time? Yeta Pratya Gargi Avidhidva Sman. My dear Gargi, this was Yajnaloka Muni. He had two wives. He wanted to take sannyas. So he took permission from both his wives. One of the wives was just an ordinary woman. She didn't really have much understanding of spiritual life. So he placated her. The other wife was very spiritually advanced, the daughter of Gargi. So she asked him some significant spiritual questions and he spent the time to give her careful answers, as recorded in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So he told Gargi, one who leaves this body not understanding the Supreme Truth, he's a kripana, a miser, someone who has got the treasure of this human opportunity, of human life, and not used it properly, like a man who has a lot of money, but won't spend any of it. Not for himself or anybody else. The money just rots, sitting being unused. That's a kippur. And one who does not properly utilize the human form of life to achieve spiritual perfection is a miser also. But one who understands the absolute truth before he leaves this body, who comes to the stage of realization through purification, through practice and meditation, he's called a brahmana, the opposite of a kripana. The definition is not, although Gargi was the daughter of a great Brahmin sage. He's reminding her that the real criterion of who is a brahmana is not what family you were born in, but your consciousness. If you understand the absolute truth before leaving your body, then you are a brahmana. Brahmajana ti iti brahmanaha. A brahmana is one who understands Brahma. Shaknoti hayavai, Krishna says in the Gita. Shaknoti hayavai yaksodhum. Prak sharira vimokshanat. What's the rest of it? One who is able to tolerate the urges of, I don't remember what, some urges, suffering and pleasure, whatever, before leaving this body, he's actually in contact with the absolute truth, and he's a happy man. If you can tolerate the urges of the senses, of pleasure and displeasure, we're attracted to some things in our material consciousness, and we're repelled by others. We have our friends and our enemies. We have our likes and our dislikes. These are the obstacles to our spiritual progress. Raga dvesha maga chi tau yasya paripantina, Krishna says. Arjuna, attachment and repulsion, aversion, are the obstacles on your path to spiritual life. Don't come under the control of them. Stay aloof. Stay detached, but also not repelled. Not attracted, not repelled. Indifferent to everything material. Then you'll make quick progress. But these passionate attachments and repulsions, they keep us entangled. So one who can tolerate the urges of attraction and repulsion, before he learns how to do this tolerance, before he leaves his body, he is actually a yogi in kind of contact with the Supreme, and he's happy and satisfied. And he can live happily. He can have all opulence and it won't attract him. He won't be subject to material attraction or repulsion. And he can be allowed a comfortable life. Gargamel Muni is able to, he didn't want it for himself, but to please his wife, he conjured up all this opulence, this palace, pleasure palace, by his mystic power, his yogic power. And he can tolerate it. He's not interested in it for himself, but he can accept it. He can live in that palace and not fall down and not become degraded in his consciousness. He's a yogi who can tolerate the urges of pleasure and pain and the attractions and repulsions of material things. Okay, so I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, bro?
You said about Brahmana, the one who receives absolute truth before one's death.
Yes.
But they do not receive absolute truth completely. What kind of path absolute truth do you mean?
The absolute truth, in one of its forms, it's hard to conceive the absolute truth of its impersonal form. But that's not the complete picture of the absolute truth. That is just the impersonal outline. So better to come into a more complete understanding of the truth with its qualities. That is something you might can grasp. The qualities of the Supreme. They were described in the Upanishads. Satya Gyanam Anuttam Brahma. Amsa Sarvavashi, Sarvashyesha Nama, Sarvagya, Sarvadit. The absolute truth is Jamadhyasa Yataha. Yato Imani Bhutani Jayante. That from which everything is born. That which he who maintains everything. He by whom everything is destroyed and into whom everything again dissolves. He's the knower of everything, the doer of everything, the creator of everything. Satyam Gyananantam, he's pure, truth, knowledge, and bliss, unlimited. So, so many qualities of the Supreme are there described in the Upanishads. Meditate on those. And then you can achieve that perfection. Meditate on the qualities of the Supreme. That is something the mind can do. But Brahman in that form, as Paramatma, that is Bhagavan. That's a practical, feasible meditation.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.